All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fuck Nicks? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. How's it going? What's going on with you? I think, to be honest with you, I think that this particular batch of peanut butter I bought at the Whole Foods in Vancouver is giving me a stomachache. Is that possible? It doesn't seem like normal peanut butter that I get out of the machine. You know, I ground it in the machine they have. I was very happy to find that machine. I found the good Whole Foods, by the way, in Vancouver. I was going to one that seemed like a satellite Whole Foods, and it was kind of sad. It was like an outpost of some kind downtown, but not too far away. There's a bigger one that's comforting to me, a big space, big Whole Foods. It's not a plug for Whole Foods because, oddly, I'm not having a good experience with the peanut butter. It seemed much oilier than some of the other peanut butters I've gotten out of those machines. And I think that's it, or else maybe I'm dying. But as we speak, as I talk to you right now, a bit of pain in my stomach. And I'm gonna think it's the peanut butter or maybe this weird cashew cream cheese that I bought at the farmer's market here. Both could do exactly what I'm feeling. Or else it's something worse. Today's show is pretty exciting for me because this guy, Ali Sadiq, he's a comedian. I didn't know about him. I think somebody hipped me to him. I don't know that I would have found him. He's not of my generation. He's younger than me, but he doesn't seem to be really in the same circles that I'm in. He's got a series of YouTube specials, but he's a very interesting and very profound and great comedian. And he's really just a first person, long form storyteller about his life, but it's very grounded in something real that you don't see in comedy much. It's a style, but it's also, he's got a story. And he's been releasing this series of comedy specials on YouTube called The Domino Effect, which is, I think that it's up to part three, and part four is coming soon. And we talk about it. But there's something about, and I don't like to use this word really because I think it gets overused. Authentic gets overused as something that people should aspire to. Authentic, vulnerability, storyteller. I mean, he happens to be all of those, but those words, those as buzzwords, don't really apply. He does something that you don't see in comedy much done well, which is long form, first person storytelling as a stand-up. This is stand-up. A lot of people try to make a separation, like, you know, he's not really a stand-up, he's a storyteller. Half of the greatest stand-ups from the history of stand-ups were storytellers. You know, whatever's happening now culturally in terms of jokes is that was always around, that was part of it, but there's a broad spectrum to stand-up, and some of the best were long-form guys. But what his stand-up is informed by is primarily his growing up before and during and now after prison. And he sort of captures and kind of illuminates a particular path of the black experience that I wouldn't really know about. And certainly as a white guy who doesn't live the life of a black person, you know, I don't know the nuances of a lot of this stuff. There's a heart to this thing that Ali Sadiq brings to it because he's a guy who is reflecting on his life and applying the lessons of his life that he's learned, also applying his experience in prison and just, you know, he's not hiding anything, but there is a sort of kind of matter-of-factness to the way he presents it and a humility to it and his ability to see himself back before prison and now, you know, who he is now with a kind of sincere reflection about it, its implications about his life and about where he's at. And this all sounds very serious, but I'm telling you, man, some of these, you know, back in the day before Cosby, you know, was known to be a monster and he did, you know, all that material that, you know, became the Fat Albert Show with these characters. Ali's got these characters, and they all are in the world of drugs and drug dealing. And But I really think he should consider an animated. But look, you'll hear it in a second. A recording of my HBO special From Bleak to Dark is now available as an LP, vinyl, or digital download from Kraft Recordings. I like Kraft Recordings. They do good reissues. I was thrilled that they chose to do to take on my special. And the cover, some of you will know from the story of me falling down, you know, blacking out at the top of my hike. I took a selfie, and that's the cover. But you can pre-order the vinyl now. There's a link on the homepage of WTFpod.com, or you can go to craftrecordings.com. It should be right there, I would think. But yeah, I'm pretty proud of the record. It looks good. I'm very happy about the cover art that I decided on. I have a show up here in Vancouver on Friday, June 21st at the Vogue Theater. Then I'm in Seattle on Saturday, June 22nd at the Moore Theater. I'll be in Phoenix, Arizona at the Orpheum Theater on Saturday, September 21st. You can go to WTFpod.com for tickets. Also, the new batch of Black Cat mugs from Brian R. Jones are sold out, friends, but there are still some white ones available. These are the same mugs I give to my guests when they're in the garage. You can go to WTFmugs.co to get yours. All right? Collect all of them. Handmade, hand-thrown by the guy himself, a potter. I've had this recurring dream for the last 2 days. And how often does that really happen? A recurring dream. You hear about those things, but do they really happen? Well, mine, I've noticed it just a couple of times. For some reason, the dream I have is that I'm out in the world, I'm doing things, and usually I've been out there doing things, getting coffee, going to the gym or whatever, for most of the day, and then I realize that I forgot to put my pants on. Literally, but totally naked, not like I'm in my underwear out there. I'm walking around, and somewhere in the middle of the day, I realize I have no pants on. I'm half naked, and no one has said anything. And then, like, there's that moment where I try to, you know, cover up, and it's just so ridiculous because, like, I've got to walk back to where I'm going. I'm out in the world. There's no way to really cover up. I can pull my shirt down over, everything that's exposed, but, like, it's still going to look stupid. It's just this moment where I realize I don't have any pants on, and to correct it is going to be even, it's just going to add to the embarrassment. So I guess there's a pretty easy read on that. You know, maybe I'm feeling a little vulnerable or a little embarrassed or a little exposed. Obviously that would be all that's happening, but I've just been up here sitting around. So, like, you know, what is going on there? I gotta go deeper. What is going on? Huh? I think one of the reasons for those dreams is I'm doing some material, one bit in particular that I do feel exposed. I do feel, you know, like it's kind of too much information. It's a delicate balance. It's very personal. It's about trauma. It's about, you know, something very, potentially very awful. And, you know, I just don't know how else to do what I do. And, you know, I did it the other night. I just want to make sure that stays public in my mind, this bit. Eventually you'll see it. It'll be on a special at some point, I think. But that might have something to do with it. That's the only thing I can really think. Okay, look, Ali Sadiq is one of the best comics I've seen in a long time. The Domino Effect, which is his series of specials, The Domino Effect Part 3 was released on YouTube last month. You can check tour dates and more at alisadiq.com. That's alisiddiq.com, and go to his channel on YouTube to watch the Domino Effect specials. And this is my chat with Ali. How long are you out here for?
Till Thursday morning.
Are you doing the Netflix thing?
I'm doing, what is it, the Comedy Store, the Original Room.
That's a good room. Mm. I spend a lot of time in that room.
Yeah, first time. I'm thinking, yeah, it's my first time ever doing the room.
Oh, it's kind of a classic room. A lot of things have happened in that room.
I can imagine.
That room is historically a dark and interesting place. Lots of things have happened in there. So you don't. So you didn't come out for that, or you did kind of.
We tossed it in with some other stuff.
Yeah,
doing some press for the new special,
which was great.
Domino Effect 3.
Great. I watched it last night. I've watched all of them. I didn't even know who the fuck you were for most of my life. And then, I don't know, someone's like, you know, I'm old now, so like in terms of knowing comics,
yeah,
it gets away from you.
Yeah.
It used to be like, I mostly know everybody. Now everybody's fucking doing comedy, so I don't fucking know what the hell's happening out there.
Everybody.
Everybody. All it takes is an iPhone and a place that looks like a stage and six of your fucking friends. And you're all set.
You ready to go.
you can make a whole career out of that.
Man.
I know. So I don't know. It's
horrible.
I know it's horrible, dude. I know it's horrible. But like, I'm old. So like, there's part of me that's sort of like, I did what I could.
Man.
You know, I'm coming up on it. I did what I could.
How many years?
Have I been doing it?
Yeah, how many years?
Professionally since 1988.
Oh.
Like almost 40 years?
40 years.
Yeah, to relative success.
And and I think that I'm old at 26 years. I'm like, I'm 50, I'm old.
Yeah.
I've been doing this most of my life now.
I know, me too. And it gets, you know, it's a weird thing. And I don't want to be experiencing this at the age I'm at. But there's some part of your brain that still thinks you're in the game. You know, like even... Like, you know, I'm watching John Mulaney or somebody, and I'm like, how come I'm not that guy? And the fucked up thing about that is I was never going to be that guy. There was no way. I don't do anything that everybody likes. I do a thing that, you know, a few people like, and I can get most of them in.
Yeah, I look at myself like I'm never going to be Andrew Schultz. I'm never going to be Kevin Hart. I'm cool.
I am
who I am.
I know. But how often you got to tell it? How many times a day do you got to tell yourself that?
At least once once a week. Because I tell myself that when somebody brings it up to me.
Yeah.
Like they're like, so, you know, you ever think you'll be big as Kevin Hart? I'm like, but... I wasn't thinking about that.
No.
I was happy that I sold out the Beacon.
Yeah.
You know, I was grateful that I sold out Chicago Theater. I was happy with the 300 people I got in the club.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, what do you mean?
Right.
Like,
well, but there's that part of you, though, that thinks like, I think we're similar in some ways. I mean, I do long form personal shit. And, you know, there's part of you that thinks like, I could do an arena with this. But what are you going to do? You're going to be able to have the control and pace that we want to have, that you want to have in these large situations. Even the Beacon, that's about the edge of it for it to feel intimate. Do you know what I mean? Like, you get much bigger than that, then you're doing a different type of presentation.
I'm willing to push the limit. I'm really, because I find things to do in comedy that suits me, so I don't think
right
about other people's things.
That's good.
So, you know, so my goal now is, now Chicago Theater was the biggest one thus far, and it felt
big.
And for me to do it there and be able to still tell long form,
yeah,
they were upset with me.
What?
At an hour and 30.
The theater was?
No, the people. They were like...
They wanted more?
It's an hour and 30. You about to leave? Like, we need to know what's happening in the next episode.
Yeah.
And that's the feeling that I want to have. And I think that I'm one of these ones that's trying to get people back to long form. So
yeah,
it'll be, before you know it, you'll be back in theaters doing long form. You're like, hey, this is what people are mostly gravitating towards.
Well, I think that somehow or another we've been trained to believe that people just are morons and cannot pay attention for more than 2 minutes.
Yeah, that's
but
what...
It's
that's
not true. But it's not true.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I believe that the phones are breaking everyone's brain, you know, and I believe that there's a, you know, a... like almost you know, animal kind of like next. But I think like when I watch you and my sensibility in terms of what I experience with my audience, look, if you're in it, they're gonna listen. It's not like you're gonna be in the middle of a story and they're gonna be like, come on.
Yeah. Hurry this thing up. Yeah.
It's too long. Where's it going to end?
I think that we write and we present in a very unique way that people want. I think people want what we have more than we really think, like you're saying.
Well, I think what they want, for me, at least the people that I've gotten, and I don't know, you know, like they like you, they want to listen, and they want it to be real. You know, there's different degrees of I don't like to use the word authenticity, but people can feel it when you mean it. I mean, you know, when you're getting choked up on stage and that's the other thing that I think we have in common is that you're going to risk, you know, the laugh for the emotion. If it's going to be emotional, then in my mind, you know, like, well, I got a laugh coming up right after this. So I can go as dark or as sad as I want to go right here because I'm jerking them around a bit, but it's honest. But I know that, like, the tricky part is, I don't know if you had this experience writing that stuff or working through that stuff about your sister passing away, but like, you know, there were times where I would talk about the death of my girlfriend and like it just stayed sad that there was no, you know, after I finished it,
I saw it
and I had to figure out how if I'm going to put this in here. In the middle, you know, I broke it up into three parts, and I'm going to talk about her dying in the middle. You know, I better be able to come out of that with a joke. And the joke that you did after talking about your sister, I can't remember how you came out of that, but it was just a beat, and it was like, all right, we're released.
You know what is somebody asked me about.
Yeah.
Domino effect too.
Yeah. Loss.
So, and I said, I don't like to go into the layout of it.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be unbelievable to most comics.
Yeah.
And most people besides the people who shot it.
Yeah.
In my manager.
Yeah.
And they like, they're going to say, they'll have to say in whatever, when I'm dead, hey, y'all know that he didn't run it. He just went and did it.
Yeah.
It wasn't I didn't go through it. I just told the story. And I knew when I got to that part.
Yeah.
I know what me and my family go through.
Right.
So it was no way for me to perform this on the road or
no,
work
right.
through it because I wasn't going to break down every because it's no way for me to get through that because it's such a painful part of the life of my family. It's not just my life. It's like what it did to my family.
Right.
To the point of I never even told my mom I did Domino Effect 2. Like, to this day, she has no idea what Domino Effect 2 is about because we've never told her, even though my sister was in it.
Yeah, and so you just tell her not to go on the computer?
She, you know, she's 70. That, oh, okay. You know, she's, you know...
Works. Because you think it would upset her too much? For the emotion of it, not about you doing it.
But. Not me doing it. It's the... The part about my sister is deeper than the death.
Yeah.
You know, so when I think about it in detail, and I've explained this to my sister. My mom, because she had us young, and then she was separated, so she worked a lot. You know, went to school, tried to better, and did. You know, built computers, worked for this company called Ferranti. Then she left there, got her master's, started doing history at the University of Texas Southern. You know, and she's built her life through things. But at the time of my sister's death, my older sister went to the Navy.
Yeah.
And then I got incarcerated. So right. It's like my mom lost all her kids at the same time.
Right.
Basically. But the me and my older sister, my mom worked most of the time.
Yeah.
And she could only really take care of us, really not raise us, just take care of us.
Right.
When my little sister came, better condition, everything's better. My mom, very stable. We're older. And my mom is getting a chance to be a parent, getting a chance to raise her daughter.
Yeah.
With the father is there, my stepdad, Ron. Yeah. You know, he's there. So she's getting a chance to live that dream of, hey, mother, parent, got it, got the whole package. I'm doing well in life. And then it's cut short. And so the completion of completely raising a child was stripped from my mom.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the deeper layer of it. And this is, my sister's like, mom always asked me, was she a good mother? I keep, like, it's getting on my nerves. I'm like, and I explained to my sister, she has to be reinforced. She has to be confirmed because the job that she was doing got cut short. And so when she asked me, I just tell her, yeah. Because it was the truth. She was a good mom.
Right.
But she was more of just, hey, I'm taking care of y'all. I'm at work most of the time. Y'all know what I'm trying to do. But
the situation was different.
Situation was just different. I understand it. And that's the most, I think that haunts her more than anything.
Whether she was a good mother or not.
Yeah.
So you're telling me that you didn't work that stuff out because you couldn't handle it emotionally. So that second domino effect is the only time you performed that?
Mm-hmm.
But you were going on stage before, no? I mean,
I was going on stage before doing another show.
Do you do it, but you don't work in pieces? You don't do short sets ever?
Not that one.
Right. But
in other sections, in other things, yes, but not that one.
So you
that was an isolated one that was, it's going to be, I'm going to tell the story from here to there. And that's pretty much all I'm gonna be able to handle in that piece.
Because I noticed, like, I guess when I was working through a different situation dealing with loss, I wanted to make sure that, like, that if the emotions came like they did over you in that profound a way. Now, I was telling that story a few times just so I knew I could handle it. You know, like, I could be on stage and let that happen. Because he couldn't control it. You know, you couldn't control it. You can't control it. So I had to do it a few times to know that I wasn't going to come, you know, unglued for the rest of it.
I had no idea.
Yeah, but you held it. You know, you experienced the emotions. You felt safe enough with that audience, with your audience, that they would be there. And then there's the other part of you, which I think is something that, you know, I do, and I think you do as well. If you're not writing things down and you're just telling stories and something's going to happen and it's going to get heavy up there, there's some other part of you that says, like, all right, you're going to get a little laugh here. You're going to have to get a little laugh here, you know?
In most cases, yes.
Yeah.
And two, my only safety net was my sister was in that audience.
Yeah.
And if that was going to be the end, that was going to be the end. Because that's what a story was at. But I think that this is the help that comes from mastering what we have done. Like, we've actually, you started off, I hosted a lot. You know, I used to be a host a lot, right?
So where'd you come up? When did you start doing it?
Houston. Yeah.
So I don't know what was left in Houston when you started. What was the club?
That's hysterical. Okay. Spellbinders was there.
Yeah.
The laugh stop in the laugh spot.
The laugh stop must have been on its last legs. I mean, it's
I love it. It was on its last legs. So I came up. It was a spot called Just Joking Comedy Cafe that was open when I got home in 97.
From jail?
Yes, from prison. Yeah, yeah. That was hysterical to my boys left. I was like, after Sam Kennison, Bill Hicks, and Theo Vidal, like, what was left?
Yeah,
like,
Yeah, I mean, I remember hearing about, you know, you used to hear about that, what was the famous place? The Workshop or something? What was it, where they all started? It wasn't that Laugh Stop. It was the Houston.
The hip hop.
Yeah, what the fuck was it? But like,
I wasn't around, but it was something.
Yeah, I mean, because the
Washington.
Those guys, you know, came out of there because I was at Dorman at the Comedy Store with Kennison, and I heard these fucking stories about him and Riley Barber and Tracy, what's his name, and Stephen Epstein and Hicks, you know, and I thought it was called the Workshop maybe or something.
It may have been.
But you know, it's just sort of like, wow, Houston. And then by the time I was a professional, you get out there and you're like, this is it? This is what we're working with?
Yeah, but now we've blossomed now.
No, yeah, no, I know. Yeah,
we're back. we're back. See, I've been a guy long enough to know what you mean. It wasn't even an insult. I was like, oh, he knows. He knows. I was secret.
And I always liked Houston. I remember doing that Laugh Stop, and I remember Mark Babbitt.
Mark Babbitt.
Yeah. But then he went away. I don't know what the hell happened to that guy. Yeah. And then that other guy who came, like, I didn't.
Jeff?
Maybe, I don't know. But he was a little more conservative. I just know that at some point I went there, and then I didn't go there anymore.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
I don't know.
And it was, we went through a transition, man.
Yeah.
You know? Cities do it.
Yeah.
So now we back strong than ever.
No, I mean, I like Houston. Out of all the cities, it's like you can't really wrap your brain around it because it's such a big city.
We have a festival.
Okay.
We have a comedy festival.
Okay.
Held by a secret group.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
It's only in one building, but they got it broken up when it seems festive.
Yeah. But they got it. There's one bar, they put a banner up. They move some chairs, and that's for the young ones.
Yeah, it's upstairs. They have a whole section.
Yeah,
but it's for the stage. I wish we did have at some point I'm gonna be able to get the improv, the secret group, the last all of spots, and do a little. I don't know,
but
one of these days.
But like in the first Domino Effect, I mean, the arc of the whole story is pre-prison. You know, like the street life. You know, what were you doing on the streets on the first one, which is hilarious? I was like, because when I first, here's the thing, like, I didn't know who you were because you stay in Houston. And, you know, he's just like this mystery guy. Someone's like, you know this guy, Ali Sadiq? And I'm like, no, who's he? He's like, he's in Houston. I'm like, all right, well, how the fuck am I going to see that guy? And then somebody, I watched the first thing. I'm like, how the fuck this guy's like the best comic ever? And, no, and he's in Houston? So, but what's he doing? And then I watched it and I was like, oh my God. Because like, first of all, there's a couple of things. Stylistically, you know, you appeal to me because, you know, you're doing, you know, long form personal stuff. But it's at the edge of, you're not trivializing the streets. You know, you're engaging with it emotionally and honestly. You're not romanticizing, really. You're just telling your experience with the characters. And I thought, like, it was so funny when I'm watching the first one. I'm like, this is what Fat Albert should have been. Where's this cartoon for kids? These are great characters.
Will it, man?
Yeah.
It's the just remember your life, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you had one. I mean, a lot of guys are making it up.
Yeah.
So, you know, so the fact that, you know, you found it, I don't know how it, when you were initially doing it. So you didn't start doing it until after you got out of, prison.
Yeah.
So before that, that's the show. You're leading up to when you started coming. These 4 hour plus shows that then at the end you're like, and then I started comedy.
Basically, it's a walk through my actual life and me thinking about it as I go. I'm like, yo, when did my mistakes start? And I'm like, yo, 83. This is when it. What happened in 83 that was significant? My dad.
Yeah.
When my dad, he saw it.
Yeah.
Before he passed, he was like, man, that is pretty much it.
Well, that's how you get wired. You know, your brain's going to get wired a certain way. And at the beginning of that, when you chose to go with him, and I thought you characterized it, you know, beautifully. I mean, because you have the gift of putting it together as a grown up, you know, and having whatever time, it seemed like you had a lot of time to think. Yeah.
Six years to think about it, you know, and go through it.
The way you set up, because at the end of this, you're just starting the prison sentence, but the way you had to adjust to that, and then even from the beginning, you know, the idea that you're coming at this having, seriously being rehabilitated.
Yeah.
So like you know, not to be crass, but prison worked.
It did its job. And I tell people, if I would have got out sooner,
yeah,
I probably would have went back and dabbled back in the streets. It was, and then this is where I learned about politics.
Yeah.
And the reason why I end up in there so long, I got caught up in the changing of the governors.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
One governor, Ann Richards. She's on her last term.
She's a good one, right?
Yeah, she was a good one.
Right.
And she's on her last term. She would have been stealing money, you know, something.
Yeah.
You know, putting in other funds.
Yeah.
But then when a new governor comes in, the first thing they're going to do is they're going to be tough on crime.
Clean up the streets.
Yeah. And keep everybody that's already incarcerated and put that on their thing. You see what we've been doing? Yeah. We locked up 98%. No, they was already locked up. But Bush Jr. became the governor.
Right.
So we got held up. Like, they like, stopped letting people out.
Yeah.
And so, they had 15 years. So, if they let you out in 7 or 6 or 8, but you got 15 years.
Yeah.
So, they don't have to parole you.
Yeah.
And, you know, me thinking I'm going to come home in 18 to 21 months, oh, man, I would have still been rolling in the game. But the point was crazy is this, that being in there, I realized that I was the only person that had actually did my crime.
Like, well, that's what I couldn't understand in this one. Like, I was waiting for it, but I'm almost happy you didn't do it. But, you know, when you keep saying that I'm innocent.
Yeah.
Is anyone else here innocent? And all the interactions with your lawyer were just too funny. You're like, don't go, do me a favor, don't go to the law library anymore. No. But there wasn't a point where, like, I thought it, you know, just because of the logic of it, I thought somebody, whether it was the old guy, was going to say, we're all innocent.
Once you get sentenced, You innocent in your mind. You know what you did. Yeah, I know what we was doing.
So, you're trying to get 5 years on 5 kilos for personal use.
Yeah, I'm a user. Go in there and talk to the people, man.
I'm an addict.
I'm trying to find everywhere. That's why my thing is, I'm not in here giving up any information to any of these people here. I don't know these people. I'm innocent. Y'all can keep talking about y'all cases. No, I'm not giving no information. I am innocent. Okay, now I get this law library. I'm trying to find me where Rio Harris was sick of me. He was
your lawyer?
Yes. Every time he talked to me, I had a scheme. He was like, hey, we're not going to get out of this by scheming.
Yeah.
We're going to, I'm, let me do my job.
Yeah, right.
Don't talk to nobody. Don't read nothing. Don't. Man, you are crazy. Like, and he was so serious when I came in. Look, Woody Denson is up for bribery.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's give him some money.
Hey, so let me. So, hey, you read it in the paper, right? Everybody knows now.
Yeah, well, you think this is the time that he's going to take more money?
Yeah, man.
When you did the first one, were you working that out in bits?
Yes.
Because they were character pieces, you know, and they were...
I wanted them tight.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted them tight.
So you had all that movement, all these characters, you're doing the people, you're exploring. You see, I imagine, another thing for me, just because I'm a white dude, you know, to hear it talked about honestly, with humor and without judgment, was a great experience for me. And I imagine that, you know, in terms of talking to black audiences, they know about this stuff. But I imagine that speaking about it with a certain sense of not romanticizing it, but sort of like, this is my life. There was ups and downs, but you know this life from the outside. But I'm going to tell you, there was some fun.
Which is the point.
Yeah.
Because I've always hated the fact that they romanticize the bad guy all the time. So how do I try to explain the kids to being good when the bad guy seems like he's having all the fun?
Right.
And but then the consequence of that is greater than the fun.
Yeah.
You know, and I reiterate all the time, y'all do know that I did not have to be out here selling drugs. My mom had a job. Like, I wasn't strong enough at that time to resist what I was seeing.
And also, your dad was living the life to some degree.
And then my pops was very wanting to have a closet full of tailor-made suits and four cars, motorcycle. My father was the romantic side of it.
Yeah.
I didn't, the movies were later. I'm seeing it in the flesh. Like, I don't have a movie a person to reference to besides my pops. Oh, were you influenced by the streets? No, my dad.
But he was like a
businessman that did this on the... This wasn't even... My father never sold crack. He sold powdered cocaine.
Yeah.
And this was something that was expensive.
Yeah.
This wasn't a street... thing.
Right, right. He was the step before the step.
Yeah, it was real. Hey, an attorney wants some coke with his paperwork. My pops delivered the paperwork and the coke. it's like $60 to $200 for these vials.
But I guess the difference is that because he sustained the life, he wasn't greedy in the same way. You know, he wasn't, you know. You know, he didn't have that swagger in the way that he needed to prove something on the streets.
No.
He just had a business. He had some guys, and they managed their business at a level where they're not, you know.
It's kind of like when I heard this guy explain on the internet how you can get rich with 25 fans. Yeah. Like, and he's like, yeah. Look, all you need is these 25 fans.
I thought it was 1,000. Who's the guy with 25?
He comes out with the with a shirt every other month. These 25 fans buy his shirt, buy his books. They promote him. If then he has these 25 fans to promote everything they do.
Yeah.
And he makes pretty good living.
Well, I mean, he's probably, the numbers have probably changed.
Yeah, now the number has increased, but he started with 25.
Yeah.
My pops had a core of people that he sold powder cocaine to.
Right.
His main thing was his business, then his chess game, and then coke.
Right.
It wasn't, hey, I sell coke and that's what I do. I'm the coke man. It's like, man, I make a nice bit of money over here.
Yeah.
Just in case my business is not doing well and you know, and I don't have time to play chess as much.
Right.
so you know, he wanted to be comfortable in his life and just not really, because he never, my dad's philosophy was, whatever you could do for somebody else, you can do for yourself.
Mm.
So you just work for yourself.
He never got busted.
Nah, not for the drugs. No. Now, he should have got busted for drugs, because then he ended up doing coke.
Oh, yeah.
You know, later on down the line. But
yeah. And then you get sloppy and weird.
Weird.
You stay up too long.
I think it was women and being out in that life. Yeah. 'Cause that was his downfall, women.
Yeah.
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 A lot of women.
Yeah, I know. You talk about it in this new one. But there's just moments where, because in the first one, it really became about that sweatsuit. Like, that was the ticket.
That sweatsuit, man, was the flyest sweat. I'm like, man, now I have those sweatsuits, and I'm like, I see what, and man, it's just a thing about a fly sweatsuit.
Yeah. Like, but you don't strike me, and it doesn't seem... Well, I guess you make allusions to things. I mean, you were involved in violence, but it doesn't feel like your nature was ever violent.
Nah.
Outside of survival.
Nah, not at all.
And unless you really had to, and then you had to, you know, you had to mean it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't
fake that shit.
Even to this day, I'm 50. I've never started a fight.
Yeah.
I was in prison for 6 years, never started a fight. Ended a lot of fights.
Yeah.
I think because, one, I'm 5'7". Most of the time I'm 155 pounds. I don't go around starting trouble, starting fights.
But you do like payback.
Yeah, but I can fight well.
Yeah, yeah.
And
well, there's that whole scene in the new one where you slap the guy despite one of the tidbits of wisdom your dad gave. That's too funny, man.
Rich cat.
Yeah.
it's a thing about respect. And I learned this from my grandmother.
Yeah.
It wasn't even a man that told me. It was my grandmother.
Yeah.
And it's that. I live by that code. If you gonna start it, I don't do no backing down. That's just not in my nature.
Yeah.
And being inside, people going to respect who commands it.
And right.
No weight class, man, you can have 200 tattoos in your face. That has nothing to do with me. People have tried to intimidate me before, and I was like, but it's a lot of talking being done. Like, if I really want to do something to you, you know I wouldn't have been doing all this talking, right?
Right.
If I was even concerned about you, I wouldn't even be doing all this listening. I did a show, and when I talked about Mitchell, I talked about to kill this CO for disrespecting me. Like, a real violation. Like, yo, man, what are you doing? Like, I was calm as I could be.
So then, where was this? With who?
Mitchell is the CO.
A CO?
Yeah, he's an officer.
Yeah.
Inside the prison.
Yeah.
And I'm on my way to my cell. And I hadn't been naked in prison since the first day of intake.
Yeah.
I bought some white shorts, like my uncle told me. And I had them shorts on under my boxers and my pants. Every day. I wash them every single day.
Yeah.
Like, for 6 years, the same pair. I washed them every day. Like, right? I'll shower with them on.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm coming from necessities, and he stopped me talking about he felt like I had contraband. I was like, what? And this is one of these officers that's bothering me because no other officer does. I'm like, I have a lot of cachet, a lot of leeway on this prison because I'm the fire and safety clerk, man. I pose no threat. I'm like a trustee. Like, oh, yeah. What, like, why are you bothering me? But it's like I always feel like he didn't like that. And the first chance he ever got to do anything, he would. So he's on the door. I'm coming through. And I see him pulling people over. But I'm thinking in my mind, he's not going to pull me over. Why would he? I'm going to the trustee's side. I go in.
Yeah.
He pulls me over. I'm like, what's going on? I think you have contraband. So I hand in my roll. I'm real cool about it. I'm like, whatever. So I take my clothes off him, whatever. And I'm standing, I got my shorts on. And I'm 1,000 times I done this. Proper protocol. I'm take your shorts off. I said, what? You take your shorts off. I say, Mitchell, I'm not getting naked in this vestibule area in front of everybody. What are you talking about? Man, take your shorts off. And he calls over the captain. And the captain knows me. He's like, what's going on, Ali? I'm like, man, I don't know. I'm confused by this whole situation. He has contraband, and I'm like, what? The captain can't just side with me if his officer's
right.
giving a
assessment.
Yeah. So I said, man, I'll shake my shorts out, but I'm not taking my shorts off. People walking by, I'm naked in the. I need you to take your shorts off. And something dawns on me that this is about to happen. And I step towards Mitchell and I tell him, I say, Mitchell, this is not going to be good. What you're doing? Is this a threat? I'm telling you something in your best interest that this is not going to be good. That captain, other convicts are coming by and they looking at Mitchell like, Mitchell, bruh, he's never been naked in the shower. And you're finna try to force him to be naked in the vestibule area with high traffic, with people coming through here. And all that. Mitchell, man. And people can see the rage in me. Take my shorts off. Lift up your feet. He go through the whole spiel, squat, lift up your balls, all this.
Yeah.
And I hadn't broke eye contact at all. I'm in my mind, I'm like, Mitchell. So after the transaction, everybody on this unit knows I've been the upbeat person since I've been here. Hey, man, I'm going to make fun of everybody. I'm going to make fun of every situation.
Yeah.
For 4 months, they have not heard one single word from me. I don't have nothing to say. I'm focused on one thing. Whenever I catch Mitchell, I've already written my mother this very cryptic letter.
Yeah.
That, hey, I came here with 15 years. They're probably going to give me the long haul. And my mother has no idea what's going on, but I explained it to her, and she wrote me a letter back, like, just let it go. She knows better than this.
Yeah.
Because this is not about pride. This is not about nothing. This is about, yo, man, you felt like you could dominate me in some form of, like, you impose your supposed power,
humiliated you,
you know, and this is what you thinking that is okay.
Yeah.
And I'm not okay with it.
Yeah.
So the time came up to where it's we on this unit, and on the other side it's the main building, this cafeteria, then you go around this corner, it's like a dead space between this the rest of the buildings and going to four building. It's like a long gate, then it's where the gate separates where an officer had to let you through, and then it's the long way to four building. Four building is a closed custody building. Got to get in trouble to go there. If you're going down this hallway, this long gated part, they know that you're going to four building. It's only one officer works that gate by themselves.
Yeah.
You know, at a time, because it's the gate between, when you come around the corner, there's no person, then it's the gate, then it's the person that lets you in the four building. So it's, they're isolated. They're on an island by themselves.
Yeah.
I find out that Mitchell is on this island. This guy is getting shipped to four building that's coming off of eight building, the building I'm on. And he's like, man, I got to go to four building. And I heard him. I was like, yo, you going to four building? He's like, yeah. I said, cool. Let me help you with your stuff. I go get my knife on my side. I have the mattress. I got his mattress. He has his white bucket where he got all the stuff in. I take his mattress out. The mattress is over my shoulder, so you really can't see me if we're walking down the street. Yeah. So he's rolling with his bucket, and he's like, man, should I report over here? Boom, boom, boom. Got to report to four building. He's talking. And it's his big bucket. It's him. It's me. This is mattress, and you can't see me.
Yeah.
Backstory. Alameen, name is Leslie Davis. He's home. We keep in contact. Alameen and Mustafa. Alameen comes on the block, and he asks, because his backstory, he's telling me. He said, man, I asked somebody where you was at. And they was like, yo, he just helped old boy move his stuff to four building. And Alameen was like, oh, okay. And Mustafa was like, no. Mitchell is on the gate at four building. Alameen's like, what? He's like, yeah. He's like, yo, we gotta get out of here. we gotta get to him. Getting out of the block is not an easy thing to do. Like, you got to tell the officer where you going. He got to buzz you out. Then you got to go through the hallway. It's a main thing. They got to know where you going. You got to get out. Then you got to get out of another gate.
Yeah.
Go around the cafeteria. Then come around to get me.
Yeah.
I got a head start.
Yeah. And you're focused.
I got a head start. I am locked in. Yeah. As I'm coming through, Mitchell buzzes the gate open for old boy going to four building. Going through, he does not see me. So it's the mattress. And all I'm going to do is drop the mattress, because I need to drop the mattress to keep the gate open.
Yeah.
I can't let Mitchell close the gate, because if I'm stabbing him, I got to be able to hit him and then slide that mattress inside and the gate will close. That'll give me time to get it back around to my building.
Yeah.
This is the only getaway plan I have. I can't get out of the prison.
Yeah.
So, but
and they're gonna know who did it. And
I'm,
right?
So I gotta get this done. I come as soon as I get the piece of the mattress through the gate.
Yeah.
On my shoulder.
Yeah.
Alameen and Mustafa comes around the building and say, Salaam alaikum, Ali. And I turn around, I'm like, what are they gonna sound? And Mitchell sees my face and closes the gate. Damn, put the mattress down. Put the mattress down. And I slide the mattress off my shoulder. And I walk from that point of the gate all the way back to Alameen and them, never breaking eye contact with Mitchell. And I tell people, the terror in his eyes was enough for me.
You let it go.
Yeah. And because from, and I was on that unit like 8 more months before I got shipped, and he never came anywhere near me. Even when he would see me, he would find something to do. Like, I'm like, yeah, because this was a thing.
Yeah.
And you know, the only thing saved your life was them two men right there. Because it was too perfect. It was perfect. It's like the quick come in to the neck 3 times, tot, 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 push the mattress in. Old boy would have still been rolling. I could have put the mattress in his bucket and never let the gate close. He'd have rolled. I'm like, man, I don't know what happened to that man. You know what I'm saying? And I would have went back to my cell with no blood on me or nothing. Man, that could have been a good one.
Yeah, you had completely manifest what would happen, and you were close to, you know, it was locked in. And those guys saved your ass.
No, saved Mitchell. I had already planned.
But you were just sure you would get away with it.
I wasn't trying to get away, really. This was like, hey, if I can get back to my cell and pack my stuff, because they're going to find me. I'm not tripping on that. Look, Alameen had 50 years. Mustafa had a life sentence. I'm going to spend the rest of my life with my friends that I've met in here and be cool. Yeah. You know what I mean? But this disrespect is not going to be tolerated. This is going to go on in a legacy. It's going to be in a handbook somewhere. Listen, if there's an inmate, do not strip them naked. Especially if they say this is not going to be good.
And if a guy is following another guy with a mattress, maybe check that guy out.
Check that guy out.
Oh, my God. But in retrospect, are you happy it went the way it did?
I am, but let me tell you who is not.
Yeah.
Little old white women. I've gotten this in the airport more than I can even count.
Yeah.
And it's always old, small white women walk up to me and say this, "You should have killed him." And I was like, "Excuse me, ma'am." They're like, "Mitchell, you should have killed him." And I've heard enough for me to analyze what this story means to other people.
Yeah.
It was a time that somebody took advantage of somebody and they never got a chance to get back at them.
Right.
It was a time that somebody enforced their will or their power on somebody that did something to make somebody feel lower than low, and they never got an opportunity to revenge that.
Yeah.
And to hear that story gives them something different, because it's people who've done things to people. If they would have had the power to defend themselves by putting that person in ICU or giving them a long one, they would have, because it's people that in this world, for some strange reason, think that it's okay to try to dominate somebody like that.
Yeah.
When there's no blessing in that. There's no, I don't know what they get out of that, but that I don't even do that. You shouldn't even do that to your children. Like, you shouldn't had this force. Like, it was just pathetic to me. Like, I didn't even understand what the purpose of it was. Like, this was pointless, because we could have achieved all of this in different measures where everybody would have been satisfied. And you know for facts, man, what you're doing is a violation, man.
Well, he was just trying to humiliate you.
Yeah. And so it's people who have experienced that and they never been able to get back. So this story means something else to people versus what it means to me.
But your process, it's not even that it's the high road, but it made you evolve, right? And understand not so much the humanity of it, but to know that forever that guy's going to be scared of you.
Forever.
Forever. You know, now that you're out.
And hopefully that changed. And he lives so far away from me, hopefully.
Yeah.
You know, but hopefully he learned, hey, man, maybe I shouldn't do that to people. You know.
That his life was at risk.
You know, because the next person may not get a chance to, you know, not do what they feel.
Right,
like.
But I mean,
I thought about it. Like, this wasn't even like, oh, I'm emotional and I'm gonna. No, this is 4 months of methodical. Like, this is so premeditated.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. This is meditated. This is thought about. This is dreamed about. Like, yo, you're going to feel helpless for no apparent reason, like you made me.
Yeah.
For no apparent reason.
Right. Well, you'd think that a guy like that, you know, being in the environment he's at, realizes that he might be dealing with a few people that don't give a fuck because they're not going anywhere.
And even though I'm going somewhere, I only have 15 years, but I'm willing to stay here. I'm already acclimated, brother. You know, I'm willing to stay.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Food's horrible. I've accepted it.
Yeah.
Bed's horrible. I've accepted it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But now you get to tell the story. So when you're in there, is that where you're deciding to do comedy?
Yeah. In 1994, going into 95, yeah, I was sitting in prison. And it's always this conversation about what you're going to do when you get out.
Yeah.
And dude asked me, Rick, and I said, man, Rick, I'm going to try my hand at being a comedian. Not knowing really what that meant.
Yeah.
Just, you know, you're a comedian, man. And Rick, long pause, just and was sitting there shaking his head. And I was like, what's up? He's like, man, and I've been in this prison a long time, man. I've been in and out. And I done said things, and I listened to what other people have said. Never really believed that anybody could even do what they say they was going to do. But you, yeah, man, you can do that shit.
Yeah.
Man, do that. Because, man, you make it easy around here a lot of days. Man, do that. And so from 94, going into 95, I kind of put a little, like, you know, at first I was just, like, jovial and sarcastic.
Yeah.
You know, and I would just, you know, do little reports about what was happening around the prison, talking about. And then I think I just started focusing in.
In front of people?
Like, yeah, because it's always people there.
Yeah.
Because you know, you're in prison. Like, but it's just me just talking.
You got to change shit up, too. It's the same audience. It's like working an evil cruise ship.
Yeah. It's like me and you. Say me and you was there talking. And now we didn't laugh and talk for an hour on the rec yard.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then the same thing that me you talked about, I may a week later end up saying something in the day room to two or three people about it, but I talked with it about you, you know, a month ago. So it was kind of more of, but then when the seasons came, like the sports, I would always be talking loud in the middle of the day room. Like, yeah, because I hated the Cowboys so much. So I would be talking crazy.
Yeah.
And it's like, yo, the little one funny though. You know? So that and it kind of developed like that, kind of the same way like if a dude starts singing in prison.
Yeah.
At first it's nerve wracking, then all of a sudden you realize, dang, you fucking sing. And then you're like, yo, man, hit that shit, man. And then like that show, like, it's funny. That's how I found out about Pink Floyd. Like the
what? Like,
yeah, you know that's in the special with Wynn. You know
which one is special? Which special?
Four.
Oh, the one that hasn't come out yet.
Yeah.
Four. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you did it. You finished it.
Yeah, four is done.
But just put out three, right?
Yeah, we premiered for April the 18th. On Moment, the same way we did, we premiered three first. And so three is getting ready to come out now
right
on YouTube.
Right.
May the 12th.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mother's Day weekend. Yeah, so that's...
And when are you going to drop the last one?
We're going to drop four, maybe a month or so after.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how'd you... What's the Pink Floyd thing?
The song Comfortably Numb.
Yeah.
Yeah. When would sing this song? Dude that was locked up with me was singing this song.
Yeah.
And we hated this song. It's the stupidest song ever. And then you realize, you know, Wynn explained, it's about doing heroin. Like, man, yo, Wynn, it's not fucking 50s. Nobody do no damn heroin. But he would sing this song, hello. He would just start out with this, like, we fucking hated this song. And then one night, everybody just, because we in the dorm, like, we just sitting there, and somebody said, man, Wynn. Man, hit that shit, man. And Wynn started, hello. And by the time he got to that chorus,
yeah,
everybody on that block, I have become comfortably numb. We hit that shit. I have been. And it's the thing. But I had always liked Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah. This song reminds me of Under the Bridge.
Oh yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's way darker. I think both of them still buy heroin.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
Both of us.
Did you buy the record? Did you get the record when you got out? Did you listen to it? Yeah.
It's on my phone too.
Oh, good.
Dark Side.
So when you get out, what do? You start doing open mics?
I start working at a men's apparel store.
Yeah.
And the Sunglass Hut.
Yeah, okay.
And so I'm in the mall, and so I'm a funny suit salesman.
Yeah.
And when you would come in, I'm just saying funny things as I'm trying to sell you a suit and a tie.
Yeah.
And then you notice that you've been walking around the mall and the shift has changed, and now I'm the guy in the middle of the kiosk in the mall. Hey, man, you know you need some shades to go with that suit. So, you know, me talking, once again, now I'm talking to an audience. If people understand, all I needed was the people to listen.
Yeah.
And I would say funny stuff. Then somebody comes by and says, yo, man, you need to go to Just Joking. And I say, where is that? He said, it's a comedy club. They do open mics on Thursdays. Okay. Cool. So, timeline. 1997, I get out October 21st of 1997. I have a job working in the mall that I'd enforced my way into. Now, November, December, I get told about Just Joking.
Yeah.
I go in December. I get on stage. It's the middle of December. I get booed.
Why?
Because I had on a suit.
Huh.
And it's Apollo night where they doing kind of like everything. They juggling, they doing everything, and this is like their open mic.
Yeah.
And so to get to the real stage time, you would have to go through this is a weeding out process. And this guy says, man, y'all ain't booed nobody tonight. Man, y'all in there tripping next night. Next person comes to the stage, man. I mean, y'all give it up to somebody, say they think they're a comic. Give it up for Ali. I go on stage and I said, hey, how y'all doing? And they start booing immediately. So now the problem with this is I'm getting booed. And at the time that I'm getting booed, Earthquake is walking into the building as I'm getting booed.
Yeah.
Okay. So now I go sit down. in the audience, and my boy Dre said, "Man, what happened?" I said, "Man, you saw what happened." I said, "Hello," and they booed me. And my older kid's mom, she said, "Where your jacket at?" I said, "They booed the suit jacket off me." So now, 2 weeks later, I come back. I had on t-shirt, jeans, sneakers. I just wrote my name. I didn't write what I did. No juggler, no singer, no comic.
Yeah.
I just wrote my name. Go up. Do good. Come back the next week. Do good. So now this is January. Do good. February. First 2 weeks of February. Do good. I come. I'm to the point now when people see me, when I walk in, they like, "Yo, he good. He finna." But I've never won because I'm getting beat by singers and,
yeah,
you know, I'm not even tripping. I just want to go up there and do good.
Yeah.
So this particular night, the owner, Alice, is in the building. It's like three steps before you go on stage. My foot is on the second step. My best friend used to DJ. He DJs the weekend.
Yeah.
Like when the comics come, DJs the weekend. He comes over to me and say, "Hey, no pressure. The owner's in here. She said if you do good tonight, she'll let you do some time on the weekend." I was like, "No pressure." Yeah. And this is the pressure. What are you talking about? I'm about to walk up. So I go on stage. I do good. She says, "Hey, you really good with this audience. What you think about being one of the hosts on the Apollo night?" Being one of the hosts, there's only one host. It's like,
yeah.
"No, I want to make it two." So February of the same club I just got booed in December.
Yeah.
I'm the co-host to this guy named Terry Gross.
Yeah.
I'm the co-host. And
how does that work? You both go up different times?
No, we go up at the same time. you just bring it up, acts. It was weird. We worked it out though. But then I'm working on the weekend. And this is a different type of comedy club. So you work on a weekend, doing your thing, but Arnaz J is like the main host. Then you had Bruce, then you had Rodney Winfield.
So it's just, I met that guy. So Rodney Winfield from, where's he from?
LA, St. Louis.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So Rodney Winfield, like everybody that's big now that's black, besides Gary Owens, because he's white with black audience.
Yeah.
Gary, I've seen everybody there. Tony Schofield, D-Ray. It's like everybody came to this particular club.
Yeah.
Okay. And Earthquake. So Rodney Winfield, man, this was the best person that I met in comedy. Because he would sit at the edge, right at the edge of the bar. Like when you come off stage, you had to come off stage, then you come up these other steps, and he's right there.
Yeah.
It's like as soon as you get off.
Yeah.
I would get off stage, and he only did this to people that he felt like they were going to be long-lasting in his business. I would get off stage, and he'd be standing. This is how he'd talk. "God damn it, Ali. You went on stage tonight, and you did good. You did good. The only problem is I did all that shit 30 years ago that you talked about." Find your own material. then I go up the next night and then be sitting there. "I wouldn't pay to see that shit." He's like, "What?" "I wouldn't pay to see that shit. That's why you first."
Yeah.
Then I go up every night. He'll be sitting there. "God damn it. Just don't even understand you." "Just quit. you're getting worse. And then go up next weekend, he's like, you gotta find your own voice.
Yeah.
Because that voice that you got is shit. Like, what? What am I doing? What am I not doing? You know, it's nothing to follow. You know, you're just doing shit out there. You might as well be a dancing bear.
Oh, my God.
What the fuck, Rodney? And, but every night you would try to get a good compliment from Rodney.
Yeah.
Because he's the only... If you walking past, you come on the stage, you just walking past, yeah. He's not saying nothing to you.
Bad.
Bad.
Yeah.
If he's giving you the, hey, man, listen. Yeah. I don't think he's ever said anything good. It's just all been in disgust. Just,
yeah.
God damn it. You keep trying, though. You keep trying.
Yeah.
And, man, and then when you get the nod from him.
Yeah.
Then when you get the nod, you didn't really did a good job.
And you remember that.
And you remember the day that you got the nod from Rodney. You come off stage and Rodney's like,
yeah.
Face still disgusted, but he still, he ain't got nothing to, he don't have anything bad to say to you.
Do you know, did you feel a difference?
Because you felt like you turned the corner.
Did you feel like that? I mean, outside of what he said, but on stage, did you feel like that?
I've been through a lot of different transitions in reinventing how I am on stage.
Like how? Like what?
It took me a long time to get to the point where I was sitting down.
I used to sit down when I was bombing. That's how I started sitting down. Like if I was just saying, if it was going nowhere... I wanted them to think I was comfortable. So, like, I was like, this is not going to get any better. And I would just sit down into it.
On a stool or a chair?
On the stool. Yeah. I usually sit now, but it really started because I was like, I'm not going to let them, no, this is my choice. I'm going to relax into this.
I came from... to the stool because I thought everything was degrees of funniness, like from Dez White used to stand in one place,
right,
and he doesn't take the mic out the stand, and it's just like I was amazed, like everybody else, you know, they it's animated, you're moving and everybody's trying to sell something. And I was just watching Dez and like, and I know I would get on my friend nerves because he next to me. I'm like, yo, he's not taking the microphone out the stand. It's crazy.
Yeah.
He's not even moving his feet. It's crazy.
And he's killing?
And he's killing.
Yeah.
Like, and he's relying. This is who I got to rely on the words. I watched somebody rely on his words.
Yeah.
Like, Dez would come out and say, this is a drink that they just poured me. I'm going to talk until this drink is gone. And you would watch the level of the drink, too. You like, I'm watching him, and okay, I think he like got five more sips, and then he's going to be gone. Like, and... Dez, it was amazing to watch somebody, because he's the first person I seen that was, I have no interest in trying to sell you anything. This is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm going to sit this drink right here. And so my dad, right, he used to pick me up, and he would, when he'd get ready to drop me off, he would always say, don't tell your mama where I live. And I'm like, Dad, cool, got you, Dad. Boom. Pick me up again every other weekend. He's like, don't tell your mama where live. He said, Daddy, gotcha. And he said, then Christmas came. And my mom came in and said, you know, Dez, I really wanted to buy you that bike. But your dad didn't send the money and I don't know where he lives. And then it's like, I do. Come on, I'll show you. Told his daddy I'm on a bike. And I was like, yo, man, I'm dying just in the presentation. I'm like, so then you have Paul Mooney
that
sits in on the stool. My experience with Paul Mooney. We have been up and down. We have an up and down relationship.
He with everybody. He was always traveling with like a nephew and some kids, and like, you know, some point you're gonna, you know, he's gonna ask you to babysit him. It was a big deal.
Yo, it was an ordeal with me and Paul, to the point where I called DL and I was like, yo, I'm about
to call Hughley?
Yeah, I called Hughley. Yeah. I'm like, yo, I'm about to fucking slap the shit out of Paul Mooney. And DL was like, you can't beat up Paul Mooney. I was like, why? He was like, because he's old.
Yeah.
And Paul knew what he did was fucked up. So then maybe 6 months later, they book us in Austin together.
You're featuring?
It's like co-headlining.
Okay.
So I'm first, though. So yes, feature. I'm doing 45. He's probably doing
2 hours.
Do 45, but he's probably going to do 2 hours.
Yeah.
And the lady, it's tension between us. And the lady is, she doesn't know this. And the lady's like, you can hear like, hey, Ali, Paul's in the next room. If you would like to speak, and whoa, whoa, whoa. I was like, and I'm not really giving an answer. And I'm like, he's over there. And then you hear her talking, hey, Paul, Ali's in the next room. He may come over and speak. And Paul's like, I go out, do the show, come back, and he has to walk past my
dressing room.
This is his apology. We walk past, he walked past, I'm in the green room, my door's open.
Yeah.
And I'm like this. He come by with people, I'm like this. And he walks by, then he walks back like this and says, hi, Ali. And then he walks to the stage like, I fucking hate him, man. Like,
what was the tension? Just because he couldn't follow you or what?
No, it was the tension about when I told him I was going to slap him. The last time we worked together, we had just got into it 6 months ago.
Oh, I was like,
he knew what he did was fucked up.
What did he do?
Asked me to count the room. I'm like, I'm not fucking counting your room. I'm the feature. Like, why would I count your room? Then whatever happened, then he came back to me. Yeah, the show is sold out. You and your white friend. Paul, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
So Raymond, the manager of the club, is supposedly my white friend.
Right.
That I'm trying to be in cahoots with to get him out of his bonus, I guess. Like, I have nothing to do with anything that's going on here. What is wrong with you? I've been here for 2 days with you, and all of a sudden you want me to count the room. Like, why would I count the room? Like, what the fuck is going on? Do you have dementia or something? Like, is something fucking going on with you?
So that was...
and then he just was talking to me crazy. Like, I was like I was a part of the club. And, like, I was helping him cheat him out of money. Like, what is going... I say, man, and it got to the point where I told him, don't talk to me no more. I said, man, don't talk to me no more.
Yeah.
Like, don't say another word to me.
Yeah.
I'm going to slap shot you. Yeah. I just got out the room. I was like, yo, man, fuck is wrong with Paul, man?
Did you respect him before?
this is like a huge influence in my comedy life. Like, somebody who I fucking adore.
Never meet your heroes, right?
Which I thought that, and then I met DL.
He's great.
You know what I'm saying? And I'm like,
yeah,
forever. This is, I met Dick Gregory.
Really?
And it's like, I'm throwing out, and not just one time. Like, me and him, I have, like, real pictures with him, like, in different, on different, like, Dick was a big influence on me. Like, I don't know about not meeting here. Just don't meet some assholes, I guess. Like, I don't
he was always difficult. Yeah, I don't know why. You know, he's carrying a lot of baggage, that guy. He was. Paul.
And I'm glad that we settled whatever differences before he passed, and I'm always happy at that. But I hated that we even got into it. Like, man, you a fucking genius to me.
Yeah. He's just paranoid and weird.
I remember somebody asking for a picture. Come on, get your picture like I'm some monkey in a zoo.
Yeah.
Like, damn. Like, well, I don't want no damn picture. Shit.
But he sat down. Like, I think the sitting down thing, though, like, once you get into it, you can make it any space intimate if you can hold that chair.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. Because all of a sudden, like, because I've done the running around thing. Hey, what are we doing? You know? And then when you sit down, people are like, okay. They lean in.
Yeah.
And then you can go wherever you want.
That's the beauty of the chair.
But you do a chair, not a stool.
Yeah, I do a chair. That's my space.
Yeah.
And I can wield from the chair. And in the next specials, I decided to do it in reverse because of the series, which I'm still waiting on somebody. I don't want to say I'm the only comedy series, because I know somebody's going to find somebody from the 30s. Such did it. Like, but in the series calls for me to be a little more energetic.
The end does?
Yeah. Because it's a lot more going on.
In the last one?
In the last one. It's 2 hours. So it's a lot more going on.
Is it a happy ending?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I would think so.
Yeah. As you got your voice and you were doing these longer form things, it seems to me that, like, you know, especially with the way you started Loss and, you know, in some degree this one, that there, at some point, you felt some sense of social responsibility.
100%.
And that, you know, you're speaking your truth to your people, but it's bigger than that. But also you're sort of humanizing, you know, things for both the black community and I think white people as well, in a way that is honest and humane and without a sense of judgment, specifically to show that you know people fuck up and that people are people and that, you know, some of the things we experience we're afraid to talk about, and that if you do talk about it, there's a tremendous unburdening that can happen.
Exactly. Dead on.
Good.
I achieved all the levels.
You did.
Yeah. I tried to check the boxes on a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
Because it seems like it's only one voice of total chaos out there. You know, just take a pill for it.
Yeah.
And instead of dealing with it, just sweep it under the carpet. Like, so you don't want to talk about anything besides somebody's sexuality, is no other problems that people are having.
Like, oh my God, dude! Like all that shit.
Like it's a lot of problems that people are having. Other than, you know, who do I want to be in love with?
Well, that's because, and I thought about this, but it gets to a point. I mean, the difference is because you're doing it for real, because you were gifted with the horrible life you had.
Yeah, Unfortunately.
But not unfortunately. But see, there's so few people that get distance from the life or live through it or even have it that are able to talk about it fluidly as a fucking human being. Everybody else is just pretending to do that. It's just sort of like, don't you have a life where you've learned something on your own, right? So, you know, that makes you the real deal. What are you going to do? You live with it in Houston.
I think you, like, in my head, man, like, because that's, I think about these things all the time. It's like I can always tell when somebody's actually lived something.
Right. Yeah.
Because this is the thing that you want to shy away from the most, because that's not who, like, I can always tell because of my mom. If you bring up any type of thing that does not put my mother in a good light from who she is right now, because she's so distinguished now. Like, hey, whatever that was, I drug myself out of that. I don't, no.
No.
Like, if it's like how my mom, I have to tell my children, I try to, do you know what would happen if I would have did this when I was little? And my kid's like, no. What would have happened? Your grandmother would have, and my mother, and they asked my mother, like, I would have never did. No. Woman, who are you? Like, I'm using, okay, this is not a bad thing. I'm using you as an example. Like, no, I would have never. Like, why would I have beat you? Like, what, like, are you crazy?
Yeah.
Like, wait, what was my mom saying? He has a different account of things.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, so my kids now, I am the person that my kids are like, no.
No.
you did not grow up like that. You, no.
Yeah.
You are very privileged.
How old are they?
Which group?
Any of them. What's the oldest?
The oldest is 30.
Okay. So they've seen all the work.
The 30 and 25 have seen all of it.
Yeah.
The 13, 11, and 10, they're like, I have no idea who my father is, but people respect him.
Yeah. So you have five.
No, I have a lot more kids.
A lot more?
Yeah. I just named a couple of ages. There's still a couple of ages out there. There's still a 6 and an 8.
Yeah.
A 3. There's all types of kids out there.
Do you have a relationship with all of them?
Yeah. I see them every day.
Yeah. That sounds like a full-time job.
It's a lot of FaceTiming on there. Like, yeah. It's a lot of... You look at my phone, it's like, there's a lot of Ali on here. Like, there's a lot of people with last name Ali. You just keep scrolling.
Yeah.
And like, yeah.
That must be the main reason you probably, you know, stay settled. Like, you stay in Houston. You got the radio gig.
I'm out of the radio.
Really?
It was the happiest day of my life.
It's a tough job.
Man.
I've done it.
Tired.
Yeah, I did morning radio. You were doing afternoons?
Yes.
Yeah, still, yeah.
Morning, you have the rest of your day.
Not really. You're out of your fucking mind. You're getting up at 5. You feel like you're like, you know, a zombie. Like you've just been hitting the head with a pillow for an hour. The whole fucking day's fucked. You're working on 4 hours, 5 hours sleep. And then you get into this zone where you're like, all right, if I can just get an 8 hours somehow, hour here, hour. You never feel right. It's hard to do comedy.
Man, and the midday. You stop whatever life you're doing.
Oh yeah, in the middle.
In the middle. Yeah. And then you got and then when everything's done, when you get like
and you got to get on there all lit up. What's going on? Now I'm gonna go finish cleaning my yard.
It sucked.
So you're out. That's good.
I'm out.
And you're doing and you own all your own shit. You work with that one guy mostly, the guy who you had on the new special. Your accountant, your manager, the dude whose dad you knew, you still with that guy?
Oh, Anthony. Yes.
Yeah.
all my outside projects. Yeah. I'm building something now. And he's managing it.
But with show business, what's your relationship? You prefer to do it the way you're doing it? It seems to be working out for you.
I think I like it like this.
Yeah.
Independent.
What's the way to do it? I mean, that's what people do now, you know? Yeah. You build your own show business. I'm too old for that shit. If I put something up on YouTube at this age, I don't have any YouTube presence, I'd spend my entire day watching that number click by. Oh, 62. You know, I'm not going to... I'd rather somebody just pay me and look, don't tell me. Just put it on. Don't tell me how. I don't want to know the numbers. I don't want to know. I'm not going to sit and fuck in front of YouTube wondering why 100 people. I'm not going to do it.
I don't look at the number. Somebody tells me every blue moon what the number is.
You know, you can just look at it. You just go on the...
I know I can just look at it, but...
You can stop yourself from doing that.
I refuse to look at that number.
Okay.
I can't do it. Once I shoot a special, I refuse to look at it until it gets to the process of me editing.
Yeah.
And it's... This is when I want everything in small intervals. Let's start at the beginning. Show me 7 minutes because watching me
in the editing room.
Oh, if it was up to me, I wouldn't have one special up right now. I wouldn't have one because I would critique it
too much. That's interesting.
I would tear it to pieces.
Yeah, I don't. It took me, 30 years. To be able to watch me. It's weird when you cross a line, because sometimes you watch older stuff, and I used to be like, I can't watch that shit. And then I watch it now, I'm like, that's me. Who the fuck do I think I was? You know, like, you think like I was a different person. No, you weren't. You just were bad at it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I have four more years to get to the 30-year mark, and maybe I'll be able to watch it.
Yeah, but you know when you're in it that you did it.
Yeah.
Like you finish a show... Like, right after you're done, do you be like, nah, fuck, I fucked that middle part up?
Yep.
Oh, all right.
I'm still there. Like, man, the guys on the road with me, it's like I come off, they're like, man, you got them on their feet tonight. I'm like, man, I fucked up. I mean, I was fucking up from the beginning.
Yeah.
And I'm still in that space. Like, I'm trying to make everything perfect all the time.
Yeah, but sometimes
something I miss. I'm just.
You don't. Yeah, I'm. I guess I'm lying because there are nights. Like I just did New Jersey, and I brought this opener with me, and she's strong, dude. And like, but they're there to see me. I got fucking 1,500 people, whatever. They're there to see me, but there's still part of my brain. It's like, God, it's gonna be hard for them. Why did I bring this girl with me? She's fucking killing out there. I got to go out there and work. And I couldn't get that out of my head. But they're not thinking about that. They're like, oh, well, she was funny. Now here's the guy. But in my head, I'm like, fuck. All right. So, and I do okay. But there was just a little bit of insecurity. And it was fine. The show was good. But afterwards, the hardest part about that is when people come up like, hey, we love the show. And you're like, yeah. Can't even take the compliment. I'm like, thanks. It was okay, I think.
I'm the worst at compliments. Like, if you want to see me, I think that's the, how they, like, Superman has a kryptonite?
Yeah.
That is my kryptonite.
A compliment?
A compliment. Yeah. It's like, if you want to see me shrink in a room, if I'm like, oh, and he's a, yeah. If I even receive an award, and it'll be like,
that's where you really got to do that thing like you did in jail. It's where you gotta just like get up and be like, you don't have to believe you deserved it, but if you act like you know they gave it to the wrong guy, they're gonna fucking not like you. Well, I'll be honest with you, you're doing great work. I think you're one of the best. I really have a lot of respect. I enjoy it. And thanks for talking to me.
Man, thank you for having me. This has been absolutely great.
Okay, good. That was great. Love that guy. The Domino Effect Part 3 was released on YouTube last month. Go check out all parts of The Domino Effect before Part 4 comes out later this year. Hang out for a minute, people.
Hey, folks, if you liked my talk with Ed O'Neill from Monday, there's an extra half hour of Stuff with Ed available for full Marin subscribers. It's stuff we had to cut for time, including Ed's stories about learning Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
What is your relationship with John Milius?
I just talked to John about 3 weeks ago.
But that goes back, your friendship with him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I went jiu-jitsu and
he turned me on to that?
He turned me on to it. He got me involved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How'd you meet him?
I met him. We were on the same lot, and then he used to get the fights on his TV in his office.
Yeah.
And we were all invited over there. And then he told me about the Gracies. He was very friendly with Horian and Hickson and all those guys, Hoyce.
Yeah.
And it took him like 2 years to convince me to go out there because I said, they wear the pajamas, right, John? And it's out in the fucking torrents. I need to get a motel room, you know, before I come home.
Yeah.
So I finally went out and met him out there, and Horian gave me a little lesson.
Yeah.
And I was what? How did you do that? I was so fascinated. I signed up.
Yeah.
16 years.
Yeah.
Part of it was I liked the family. And then, of course, over time, you know, they fight all the time. You know, the Brazilians are tempestuous.
Yeah.
And so they were like samurais. They were like a samurai family.
Yeah,
you know,
they
had a diet. And,
but you were there. You were in the...
I was in the inner, the absolute inner sanctum of the Gracies.
Well,
I was in rooms where they were fighting each other.
Right. Oh, wow.
Where you could never tell
if it was real or not.
Oh, no, real.
Oh, yeah.
But you couldn't divulge
who
won or, you know.
Right. You got to keep the brand in mind.
You had to.
To get the Ed O'Neill bonus episode and all the other bonus episodes we do twice a week, go to the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. And a reminder, this podcast is hosted by Acast. Let's spin the wheel of old guitar riffs. What are we landing on? This. Boomer lives, monkey, La Fonda, cat angels everywhere.